We are live now by a series of technical miracles that cannot be explained. But if you are around, thank you. Thank you for being here. So the two topics that we will be discussing... Oh, and by the way, Nathan's not here, which is the extra thing as well. So it's just us two for today. And so instead, what we're going to be doing is we're going to be talking about two topics. I'm going to be talking about Scarlett Johansson suing Disney, or suing Marvel. Or actually, I'll be explaining all the entities involved in whatever later. And also, I'll undoubtedly have a Disney tirade in me somewhere as well. Ben, you want to explain what you'll be talking about?
On my mind recently, which is that diegetic music in Star Wars. So it may not be the most like well-developed segment that I've done, but you know, something I can just talk a little bit about. So
the show must go on. Yeah. And last thing I'll say before we begin is, as you can see, I have a cap on right here. Gotta do a shout out. This is my weekly update is I finally have merch for Ariella. So this beautiful cap right here, this is a beautiful crew cap. You know, if you're on set and you want to like, you know, you want to look fresh, but like subtle, you know, you can, get this, the beautifully insignia'd Ariella cap. It's got like, here, let me just show you. On the back there, it's got like the Ariella logo. And you can rep my company, which you probably know nothing about. But I like the hat. We've got shorts.
I like it.
Yeah, see? Hey. And we've also got t-shirts and whatever. It'll be on the Ariella store, ariella.co, whatever. And that's pretty much all I've got. So, Ben, you can take it away.
Okay. So, yeah, a little bit of... discussion of diegetic music in Star Wars and effectiveness and silly decisions, silly creative decisions that are not the composer's fault. So I know we've discussed it before, but just for any audience members who are not familiar with what diegetic music is, diegetic music is music that is in the world of the media which you're watching. So, you know, in the world of a video game or in the world of the film, not just something that like the audience is hearing, but like the people in the film or video game, whatever, are actually hearing. It's part of their world. And Star Wars has a pretty nice tradition of diegetic music. I'd ask, you know, anyone who's in the audience what their favorite piece of diegetic music in Star Wars is, but that's not really a competition because I'm sure that 100% of people, if I asked them, would say the Cantina Band in the first movie, and that's really the classic. Although there's some other really cool things. So, yeah, that's obviously the first example that's going to come to everyone's mind, and that, like I said, kind of starts the great tradition of diegetic music in Star Wars. So the reason I actually was thinking about this topic was I was asking myself, thinking about like future topics to do, and I was thinking about, you know, if I want to, I've talked a lot about not like directly about the score for Solo, but we've talked kind of tangentially about it and how I think it's probably the best score of the last decade. And thinking about, you know, if I were to talk about Solo, what would I start with? And the first thing came to my mind was talking about the diegetic music, which is a really, really silly choice, probably. But I think that's a really, it would be a good way to look at it. Like, you know, what is so different about it than a lot of other Star Wars, even Star Wars scores, recent Star Wars scores, and why? Like, what is the diegetic music doing? And so I kind of went from there, and not so much into Solo, but thinking about diegetic music in general in Star Wars. So why? What makes diegetic music in Star Wars effective? Like, what is so great about the diegetic music in Solo, for example? And so in Solo, there are three kind of examples of diegetic music. And the first one we can kind of write off. which is Han sees the recruitment poster for, you know, joining the Imperial, Air Force, and or I guess it'd be Navy, I guess they call it Navy. So, you know, becoming a fighter pilot, and the recruitment poster has Darth Vader's theme in a major key, which is a really stupid decision, if you ask me. Not like musically a stupid decision, but stupid decision on whoever, you know, the director who decided they wanted that to be included, because you know, how can you take like a really iconic theme, maybe the most iconic theme in all of film music, and then just kind of pretend that it's actually like the sound of the Empire's recruitment? Like, it's just, it's a ridiculous self-commentary. Like, okay.
Yeah, so, it's like fourth wall breaking in a bad way, I guess.
Yeah, it just doesn't feel right for Star Wars, you know? Like, if that had been the, like, diegetic sound of the Empire, you know, from the beginning, not just like the, you know, the theme for Darth Vader, that would make more sense. So we'll write that off, because that's not a composer decision, that's a higher level decision that was really silly. But the other two pieces of diegetic music we get in it, which I just find so fascinating, it's called Chicken in the Pot and Stormtrooper JP054 Karaoke. And they're both sung by, I don't know the names of these, you know, characters. They have official names, but this kind of singing duo that sings on Crimson Dawn's party boat. So that's part, you know, it's in that tradition of Star Wars diegetic music, mainly being in like lounges, bars, kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
There are other uses of diegetic music in Star Wars. I guess the other general things you're going to find diegetic music in Star Wars, things that like you get mass choral singing that is supposed to be like the singing of the people in victory moments. So the end of episode 1 and the end of episode 6. Mm-hmm. I find both of those a little bit annoying, but you know, I think that's part of, it's kind of an intentional effect by Williams. You know, the Ewoks singing and the little kids singing. I guess there's just some other general, like, world-building, soundscape-building diegetic music, though a lot of it is, like, was recorded and then cut from the film. Various films. So that's not terribly important. But most of his stuff kind of follows in the general, you know, pattern laid out by the original Cantina Band. And what makes stuff effective, diegetic music? Like, one of the great things about the Cantina Band is that initially, you know, Star Wars, I mean, it's all not practical effects, but they're not using CGI in the 70s. And for that reason, like, the world really feels more, like, gritty and concrete, because, you know, people are literally walking around in their alien costumes. You have the Modal Notes, it's the name of the band that plays in Cantina.
I had no idea they had a name.
Oh, yeah, everything has a name in Star Wars. I just don't necessarily remember every name. Like, I should probably remember the name of the two singers in Solo, but, you know, they don't ever appear again.
Were they named by the production, or is that like a fan thing? Modal Notes?
Oh, no, they have official names. I mean, if you want to know them, you know, because they don't say them in the film or anything, but if they're given a little backstory, you know, like a one paragraph backstory and like whatever, they put it up on the official Star Wars page. You can look it up.
Mm.
So the Modal Notes, the group of aliens, kind of orangish aliens with their kind of bulb heads, light bulb heads, in the cantina. I mean, they feel very like concrete, and they're playing like, you know, they have these wacky instruments that belong obviously in this other galaxy, And I mean, yes, the you know, if you look at the orchestration of the actual piece, they're played by a bunch of saxophones and steel drums and trumpets, but it's orchestrated in such a way that like it sounds like it could be coming from these guys. That's what's so cool about it. Like, it's a cool, catchy tune. It works with the scene, and it doesn't seem outrageous to imagine that like that's whatever these instruments in this galaxy would sound like.
Yeah.
I don't know that that's necessarily like the thought that goes through everyone's head when they like see that, but to me, I mean, that's really important. I can imagine those sounds being produced, and the sounds like capture this kind of gritty vibe, you know, and like,
yeah,
it's kind of cool. Like, they're playing, they got this jam going, and then, oh, someone gets shot and killed in the middle of it, and they just stop. They look at each other and they go back to playing, right? Like, it tells you something about...
It's a CD bar.
Exactly. It tells you where they are and what the crowd is like. So, you know, obviously that's really effective. So, before I get back to solo and those two bits of diegetic music, what I want to talk about some examples of things that are less effective, and there are plenty of examples of really ineffective diegetic music in Star Wars, and some of these are Williams' fault, some of them are not. So, like, you could, for instance, you could look at the Max Rebo, not Max Rebo, sorry. I'll think Max Rebo is the kind of blue elephant guy, but in episode 2, so he's in episode 6, but in episode 2, his name is Dexter. Obi-Wan goes to Dexter's diner to meet with this alien who tells him about the Kaminoans, the cloners making the clone army, and the actual diegetic music is way long. The scene is like 12 to 20 seconds long. It's like a 2-minute long thing, but you should never subject yourself to listening to all of it if you listen to the original soundtrack. But, you know, so there's some diegetic music in Dexter's diner. I mean, I guess for the fact that it's 12 seconds long in the film, it's fine. Like I said, I wouldn't ever listen to it beyond 12 to 20 seconds. This kind of really silly, like, techno music. And maybe that's the root of like ineffective diegetic music. There's just not really a coherent sense of like what musical style should exist in a galaxy and when. It tends to be this weird techno stuff. Mm. It sounds like it's from the 80s and or a cheap imitation of 80s music. So that's an example of like, it's probably fine for the 12 to 20 seconds that it's in there. But beyond that, it's unlistenable. Two other things. So I mentioned Max Rebo. So if you watch episode 6, there's some fun stuff. So in Jabba's palace, Max Rebo, the kind of blue elephant guy, he has his own band, the Max Rebo Band. And they perform. Well, we have a Twi'lek dancing rather suggestively for Jabba. And in the original film, they do a song called Lopty Neck, which is written by John Williams. And it's actually not bad. It's not like the greatest thing, but it sounds like it's in the right world. It doesn't sound like ridiculous. It sounds like something you can imagine is coming from Max Rebo's instruments. And it sounds like something you can imagine a crime lord who's basically having like a sort of like a strip dancer dancing for him, and you know, a bunch of live musicians performing would, you know, could conceivably be listening to.
Right.
You know, it doesn't. I mean, like a PG strip dancing, like, you know, but that's clearly like the suggestion that we're being given. So, you know, I think it's effective. Lopty Neck. So they wrote the lyrics first, and then they translated them into Huttese, the language of the huts, like Java. I think the actual lyrics in English are like Lopty Neck. I think it means work it out. I don't know. So, you know, that's totally fine if you ask me. And that was written by Williams. But in the 1998 special edition, when they redid that scene, amongst a whole bunch of other scenes, and added a whole bunch of CGI, Lucas decided that was not going to cut it. So he hired Jerry Hay, I want to say is the name of the composer, Jerry Hay, to write something called Jedi Rocks. So we've got like we're going from the original kind of like real costumes and people in real costumes to a whole bunch of CGI. He puts in a CGI like it's kind of weird alien who has a name and I'll probably should remember it, singing for Jabba, who's apparently like Jabba's mistress, but most just kind of like this tiny little like blue blob with a long like lips that like extend out, like it's kind of weird.
I think I know what you're talking about. Yeah.
Yeah, so he decided that he needed new music for this and that Lopty Neck wouldn't work, so he commissions Jerry Hay to write Jedi Rocks, which is just, it is so bad. I mean, the scene itself is not good because of the CGI, and we could, you know, you could go into like silly creative decisions Lucas made with the special editions, but to change the music too, I mean, Jedi Rocks, I'm not gonna criticize Jerry Hay for his writing, but it's just, it's like the worst possible imitation of really, really bad 80s like techno disco something, like not even has his own identity crisis. And it just has, it makes it seem ridiculous. On top of it already looking ridiculous with the CGI.
Right.
So, you know, that's like the epitome of failure. That's totally George Lucas, like, I need a totally new musical direction here in addition to my, like, artistic visual direction on this scene.
George Lucas was not a good director at all. famously bad director. I mean, like, no one liked working with him, which is not very good, you know, in terms of cohesion amongst your team. He was famously obsessive with details that didn't end up getting really into the film anyway. Ended up, you know, a lot of details that would get cut out eventually. And then he got really obsessed with like the tech and the logistics, which is like not really the things you're supposed to be focusing on if you're trying to direct a film, which is why he was such a brilliant producer. I think all those like skills really translate a lot better as a producer than a director. And I think it shows in what films he did or did not direct. Yeah.
So, I, you know, I'm not gonna, that's on Lucas. It just, so we have like his music, it just doesn't seem like it should be there, like stylistically. It doesn't seem like it could be something that's coming from Max Rebo's instruments. And it just feels so insincere. Like, it feels like it's trying too hard to like be vaguely like galactic, but in a bad, like, I sound like I've been listening to like all the worst 80s music and not really understanding the style anyway, kind of way. So does it accompany the, like, you know, Twi'lek dancing for Jabba really well? No, it makes the whole thing just really, really ridiculous. So I guess it comes down to that, like, sincerity. You know, you gotta take your diegetic music seriously. It has to feel like it like belongs in the world that it, and the role in the world that it's supposed to play. And also, you know, it has to sound like it could realistically be like being produced. So to get kind of quickly into to Solo, the two tracks, I mean, so when I say take it seriously, like, I don't mean that, you know, like the composer can't have like fun with what he's doing, but he also has to take like the role the music is playing seriously. So like Chicken in the Pot is according to John Powell, he came up with the title and the lyrics because he saw the concept art for the scene, and it looked like we had, you know, this like this female singer and then this, it's kind of this disembodied, like almost like a disembodied head in floating in water, which is the male singer. And he thought that this guy looked like a chicken in a like pot being boiled. So he wrote the lyrics about, and the lyrics like literally in English were like talking about the female singer talking about how she wants to eat this chicken in the pot. And he's basically like, no, I don't want you to eat me. And of course translated into, I think, Huttese as well.
Is this supposed to be like a folk tale sort of song? Was that what they were going for? I'm not familiar with it, so I don't remember, at least.
Because the lyrics themselves like aren't important because, you know, it's in Huttese, so we don't know what they're singing unless you know, the only people who know what Huttese are is you know, whoever like does the official Huttese for Star Wars. So, I mean, he's not taking like, he's having fun with what he's doing, but the music itself is very serious. Like, it sounds absolutely perfect for like people performing in this kind of upscale gathering of like organized crime leaders and their girlfriends. It works really well. So, you know, he's taking like the role of the music seriously, even if he's not taking it like because the lyrics don't matter, right? So the lyrics are, you know, he's having fun with it. The music just, it is so well written and with such like attention to kind of making this, it's kind of like this Latin sound. Like, you kind of feel like you're walking into like a kind of like bar where you're going to go drink like tequila and sangrias and stuff. Like, it's kind of like, it's a really interesting feel, and it's very authentic to like the real world, while still also like having enough, you know, effects that make it sound in a different kind of space world as well. Chicken in the Pot, and then their second act, Stormtrooper JP054 Karaoke, slightly different like flavors of Latin, but it's so well done. And like, if you listen to it and you pay attention to those tracks, they really put you in the world. Like, you it makes this criminal gathering more believable, you know, like you can really imagine like that's what these people would be listening to. It, you know, that it's this is the kind of sound that those people are listening to and enjoy, because of the kind of singers they would hire to come into their gathering. It's good music to listen to. Like, your ears aren't gonna bleed when you listen to it. So that's diegetic music done right. I would say, you know, there, like I said, there are other uses of it in Star Wars. Like, you could look at the like Ewoks singing at the end of Episode 6, which you could, you know, like or dislike. I think it kind of hinges on how you feel about the Ewoks themselves, or the children singing at the end of Episode 1 when Naboo has been liberated from the Trade Federation blockade and siege, and which is interesting too, because they actually sing Darth Sidious's theme in a major key and really slow, which is kind of cool, because we have Palpatine standing right there, you know, watching the like choir of kids in the street sing. So, you know, they're letting you know that this is Palpatine, but not in a threatening way yet. So that's kind of cool. You know, you could find that annoying as well. That's your preference. It is kind of supposed to sound like he wants, you know, kind of off key singing from these kids. So, intentional or not, So that's another use of it. But I think that, you know, the best Star Wars diegetic music is kind of, you know, stuff in these seedier bars and gatherings. And when it's done really well, it's sincere. You know, it's trying to take its place. You know, it's in that galaxy. It's in the kind of situation in the galaxy too that the people would find themselves in. So it's believable in that way. It's believable in that it would come from the instruments that are presented. Like if you have a string instrument, it shouldn't be making like a trumpet sound kind of thing. And still sounds like just vaguely, you know, just enough beyond our galaxy kind of thing. So those, I think, are the best tracks. And that's why the Cantina Band is so memorable to so many people. Why it's one of the most memorable tracks of all Star Wars. So if you're going to write diegetic music, I think you want to follow that model. It should work in whatever world you're creating. It should be sincere. It shouldn't just be like, I'm going to put 2 seconds of effort into this and call it a day.
Right. Are there any other franchises, movies, or whatever that do diegetic movie music well, you think, that off the top of your head?
Off the top of my head, Harry Potter, at least the earlier films, has some cool stuff. But not nearly as much. There's a really wacky track. I can't remember if it's in the film or not. It's definitely on the soundtrack. It's like these like weird three like voices, male voices singing this kind of like ghoulish manner. They're singing like "Merry Christmas, ring the Hogwarts bell, Merry Christmas, cast a Christmas spell," and it's just so weird. I don't remember if it's in the film or not, but like all the diegetic music that's in those first three films, you know, it shows you that, like, there's something like kind of like these wizards, you know, these like 11-year-old kids who are like wizards. I mean, like, it's kind of cool and like, you know, it's wild fantasy, but like they're also kind of like kind of kooky, like off people too, you know, to be a wizard and, yeah, like, oh, I'm playing with toads and putting like cutting up snakes and putting them in potions and stuff. Like, so,
yeah.
Of course, that's, yeah, Williams as well.
I was gonna say that's Williams again. So basically, if you want to be good, just do what John Williams does. Steph says, "I can't get over the lyrics and idea behind Chicken in the Pot." Yes, it is. It is quite absurd.
It is. It's what, like I said, that's the cool juxtaposition. Like, you can have fun while you're creating it, but also like take its role in the film seriously, you know? And that's why it's so good. Like, and if I were to, you know, start a segment on Solo, I would start with the diegetic music, because if a diegetic music is crafted with that much care while also having a good time, like, you know, the whole film is score is going to be great, which it is.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. Nathan is in the chat right now. He says, yo, what's up? We miss you on the podcast. So I don't know. If you agree with anything that we say here, just hit the like button, post the comment or whatever. If you have more to say about all this stuff, you know, we're in the Discord. We're talking a little bit more and more. We want to have constant conversations, not just once a week. So in the link in the description, there's a link to our Discord. I think it's going to get popping in there. So you don't want to miss it.